So, good day everyone. We're here for another episode of the DVD show. So, for today, we have a Gilas Pilipinas forward and also a forward of the Blackwater Bossing before and now also with the NLEX Road Warriors in the PBA. Also, he was in the Limitless team in the PBA 3x3 before he played 5-on-5. So, I'll now welcome here on the DVD show, Brandon Ganuelas-Rosser. Thank you for joining me here on the podcast.
Thank you, bro. You forgot one team. I was on Ala Pilipinas too on the ABL.
Oh yeah, that was your first.
I always rep Ala. That was like one of the funniest teams I had. But I appreciate the invite, and I'm glad to be on the show.
Yeah, for sure. We'll talk about your Ala stint later and all your other stints. But yeah, thank you. I'm really interested to learn more about your story and how you became one of the like the number one pick in the draft, and yeah, being a key cog in the PBA. But to start things off, I wanted to ask, like, now it's the PBA on tour, so everyone's like the stars or the main cogs of the team, most of them are on break, and there's the other players getting run. And like, yeah, I heard you also got injured during the SEA Games because of the flooring, and you're gonna miss the whole PBA on tour. So yeah, how's life for you on and off the court?
It's going good, man. I went to the Gilas stint after last conference. And, I did that for a little bit. And then, I was excited to come back and play on the tour. Like, you know, it's always good to just get running. You know, I was like, you know, it's going to be a good way for me to just stay in shape for the whole year and stuff like that. But unfortunately, when I went to Cambodia, you know, I was playing the games. You know, my leg was already hurting a little bit, like at the end of last conference. And, it was like in my shin area. So I was like, man, like, you know, I'm just going to power through, you know, laban, you know, for the country, you know, Gilas, it's, you know, redeem team, all that stuff. So, I did that. And then, we won the gold. So, you know, I was feeling good. But my left leg was still hurting a little bit. And then the day we landed back from Cambodia, Manila, I remember at the terminal, I couldn't even, like, walk. I was, like, limping all the way back to, like, baggage claim and, like, to my car and stuff. So, the next day I went and got an x-ray, and then I got the results back. And they said, are you aware you've been playing with 3 stress fractures in your leg? I was like,
no. Huh?
I was like, I thought I just had shin splints. You had stress fractures. So, I had to take care of that. And that's pretty much the reason why I won't be playing on the PBA on tour. It's an injury that, you know, doesn't require surgery. But it just requires, you know, just time off, basically. So I'm not complaining too much, you know, getting a little time off. But also, I also, you know, want to play and work out. But, you know, lately I've just been, you know, just trying to get better. You know, last week I actually just started working out just a little bit. But, my leg is getting better. My leg is, you know, pretty much healed now. So it's just ramping back up and just, you know, getting back in basketball shape. But, you know, ever since, you know, that, you know, it was coming off a long conference and then the Gilas, and then that happened. So, you know, it was okay to actually kind of just take a break, you know, because, you know, the PBA, especially basketball out here, you know, it's a year-round thing. So, I'm just, you know, relaxing right now, getting back in shape and just recovering.
Yeah. What did you do, like, when you were recovering from the stress fracture? Were you just, like, lying down? You can't do, like, go in the court or bedroom?
Yeah, literally, I just had to just sit down. Like, basically they're like, you just have to just sit and ice your shins for like 4 or 5 weeks. So I just was at home. I couldn't even like go to practice. Excuse me, I had a walking boot. I think that's why some people thought I hurt my foot, because I had like one of those like air cast on. But yeah, it was just because I just couldn't, like, when I did walk, I had to like make sure that I wasn't putting too much stress on the shin. So, you know, I was just at home, you know, just a lot of time with my girlfriend, a lot of time with, you know, our puppy, our dog. So just relaxing, enjoying a little bit of downtime.
Oh, okay. How's the normal, like, timetable before recovery for that? Like, you know, 4 to 5 weeks, or is it longer?
It's about 6 to 8 weeks. So I think right now I'm at, like, the 6 and a half week mark. So, you know, that's just to recover, like, to heal up the bone, you know, for it to, like, go back to normal. And I had 3 stress fractures. So, you know, I think it's healed now, but it's another, like, 5 to 6 to get back to just being able to, like, play and jump and, be able to like do all the stuff I was doing before. So it's a pretty long, you know, process. Like I remember when this first happened, I was looking like Cade Cunningham for the Pistons. Like he was out the whole season with this. I think he like hurt his shin like the first month or second month of the season, and he was out for the rest of the year. So it just depends on like the severity of the fracture and stuff like that. So luckily mine weren't, you know, too bad. And luckily, like you said, like in Cambodia playing on that floor, like nothing like really, really bad happened to where, you know, we had like a really bad situation on my hands. But, you know, I'm just thankful and blessed that, you know, I'm able to just require just resting and just staying off my leg.
Yeah, for sure. And like yeah, I knew about Cade Cunningham's injury because I'm on fantasy and I lost him like my league because he was one of my early
That's like a
picks.
starting
So
guard right there for your fantasy team right there. It's like
yeah, and I didn't know who to replace him
the
with. Like you can't
starting
get anyone to replace him and he was out. So yeah, that's why I remember Cade Cunningham's injury. But yeah, going back to the stress fracture, did they ever say like how you get that injury? Is it more on wear and tear? Like well, how do you get three stress fractures and you didn't like feel it that much in the first and second, like tolerable pain, and then in the third, that's when you wasn't that tolerable anymore, and you didn't know at all.
I had no idea. It was so crazy when they said that because I knew like something was wrong. I was like, what's going on? I was like, this doesn't feel like shin splints because it was on my left leg, so it would come and go. Like I think that was one of the reasons why I thought it was shin splints, because I'll do a little bit of rehab, feel like a release my calf or something like that, and it would go away. So I was like, okay, it's just shin splints. It's just running, you know, at you know, in legs, when we play, like we're running, like our practices are like this. I'm like, I think it's just, you know, we're running a lot, and you know, it was a long, you know, season. And you know, when I just went back, I was like, yeah, I gotta make sure it's like there's nothing bad. So, you know, I got bad news, but it was, you know, could have been worse, like I said. But no, I think it was just from just playing, man. Like, you know, coming off, you know, like the 3x3, you know, I played the two conferences that I did that SEA Games, and then I did the PBA, like the All Filipino, then the rest of the season. So it was just a long grind. I think it just caught up to me at, you know, at that time.
Yeah, talking about that, I wanted to ask you that you mentioned that the tournaments or the games were there were barely any breaks if you if you wanted to join Gilas and wanted to join 3x3, 5-on-5. And I had Simon and Cecil like a couple of episodes back only, and he was reiterating that he prefers a two conference format because he could go home to the States, spend time with his family, and then it would also be they would also be less susceptible to injuries and more time to rest. Like in the NBA, it's an 82 game season, but they have like a couple of months to actually like go on vacation and not have touch a ball for I don't know a certain juncture of time. So for you, what's your opinion on that? Is it better to have like a PBA like three conferences and like you barely have any breaks, especially if you join the national team, or is it better to have like a longer break but like a more season style?
Yeah, I think I'd be in favor of like the longer time off, the two conference only, like something like that. You know, like I think Simon was saying, like it's a grind, man. Like you know, just making sure we take care of our bodies because, you know, at times, you know, during the conference, you know, you're dragging a little bit, you know, and you know. It might not seem like it because when you look at like a schedule, you're like, oh, you're only playing like 11 games. You're not playing that much. But, you know, there's a lot of time in between. There's a lot of practices in between. And those add up a lot, you know, like making sure that, you know, you recover from practice is a big thing that, you know, I've learned in my first year here in the PBA. So I think that, you know, there is a happy medium. I think the two conferences would probably be the best. And you know, we'll see next season because you know, because of the World Cup and all that, we're gonna have the two conferences. The I think it's commissioners and then all Filipino. So you know, it'll be nice to see like how I feel like during that and after that, and you know, maybe you know, if we have some success and the games go well, and you know, I think that's another thing that might come out of it. The level of play might increase too because, like I said, a lot of guys won't be as sore, won't be as tired. You know, it's a little less games, but they mean more, you know, because you know, you might be able to be like, oh, you know, we always got next conference, but you know, we've only got two, you know, like, hey man, you know, we only have two opportunities to get to the playoffs, two opportunities, you know, to potentially, you know, win a championship or make more money or whatever you're, you know, playing for. So, you know, I think there's a happy medium, and, you know, I'm thankful, you know, it's not my job to like think about, you know, what to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm always happy to play too at the end of the day. Like, I love basketball. You know, it's been killing me, you know, just being here at home and not being able to like go to practice, like go to the gym, get shots at, like, it's been killing me. So maybe I'm like in a weird place where I like, I want to play more basketball right now, but also like long-term, like, yeah, maybe it's not the best.
Yeah. I get your point there. And yeah, you mentioned about having on a break now, and yeah, you won't play in the PBA on tour. So that's like your chance to get some reps in. And I think the next conference will start maybe September or October. So what's your plan on how to be in tip-top shape when you come into that conference, and you're still like the same Brandon Rosser, and you're still one of the best big men in the PBA? You know, some players, like when there's time off, they can like strive away from basketball, do other things when they get in, and like you're gonna be like James Harden or like Luka Doncic in these other seasons where they took a few months before they got into their peak shape.
I think, you know, with me, you know, I kind of used to be like that, like, because there would be so much basketball, and then when you have time off, like, you just want to get away from the game. Like, you literally don't even want to pick up a basketball. Like, you don't even want to go to a gym. But I think, you know, that's something that, like, younger players – that's crazy me saying this right now. Like, younger players are able to do, like, their bodies and the things like that. Like, they can recover and bounce back quicker. Like, I just celebrated my 29th birthday, so I'm like, man, I'm –
happy birthday.
I'm almost in it there. Thank you. I appreciate it. I was like – I'm almost 30, and, you know, I know some people say, like, 30, like, 29, 30, like, that's your prime, and I do feel good, like, for sure, but I also know that, like, I don't have that luxury of just, like, okay, a month before the season, like, I'll just pick up the ball and, like, start working out. Like, it has to be, like, little by little, like a LeBron approach, like, all year, like, making sure you're just in shape, and, you know, that's why I'm excited that, you know, I've been able to, like, heal up a little bit now to where I can, you know, get on the, you know, air bike or get on the assault bike and, like, get some cardio in like that, or, you know, little, like, weightlifting, you know, maybe shooting, like, just a bunch of free throws and stuff like that. So, you know, I think, you know, every player has its own, like, system that works for them. And mine is kind of still evolving, too, because it's only been my first year in the PBA, so I don't really, like, you know what works best. You know, this is my first PBA 5-on-5 offseason, so you know, we'll see how I feel going in, but you know, I'm confident in myself, you know, just working on my game. I'm always trying to improve. I'm always trying to, you know, get better cardio because, you know I have to play a lot of minutes. And, you know, also this offseason, I'm trying to focus on just maybe bulking up a little bit, just strengthening up a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, first time I played junior, I was sore as hell the next morning. So doing stuff, like being able to, like, I know what I'm getting myself into more now, you know, so just, you know, putting the game plan together to make sure that, you know, I come back next season, you know, tip-top shape and a little bit better.
Yeah, for sure. And everyone's excited to see you. And I've watched a lot of NLEX games with Jonathan Simmons especially, and you guys were fantastic. So we're excited to see you back on the floor. And I think it was just injuries also, like in the last conference with Wayne Selden, like he was also a good import, but then the injuries kind of caught up. But then we'll see when everything's back to normal, everything's back healthy. But before going on to the Gilas conversation in the SEA Games, since people want to hear your stories about that few weeks you were there in Cambodia, are you eligible to play for Gilas as a local, or are you not eligible? Like, because Matt Canuelas, like your brother, he played before for FIBA Asia, but you, I'm not sure if are you eligible. Like, pretend we wanted you in the World Cup pool, would you be eligible, or only as a naturalized?
Yeah, unfortunately, only as naturalized player. You know, it's unfortunate, you know, because, you know, I love, you know, representing the country and stuff like that. But, you know, my brother was born here in the Philippines. You know, I was born in the States. So that's the only difference. So, you know, I wasn't able to secure my passport either. You know, I got it when I was like 20, I think, 21. You need to get it before you're 16. So, you know, just a couple of things just didn't, you know, happen on the right time. And so, you know, I'm not able to play for Gilas, but, you know, I told Chot and I told, like, you know, all the bosses there, like, you know, SEA Games, I'm always down to play, you know, Asian Games, depending on the rules, you know, I'm always down to play. And, you know, you never know in the future, you know, I know there's some rules and stuff like that, that, you know, FIBA's starting to loosen up on a little bit. So, you know, whenever, you know, an opportunity comes to, you know, put on the jersey, No, I'll always jump on it and I'll always take it. So, being able to get like that little taste, in the SEA Games, it was really cool. But, hopefully one day, I could be, on that stage, that World Cup, maybe even Olympics one day stage.
Yeah. Your brother has had a passport since he was born here. So he got it before he was.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Like even in the PBA, he's not even like considered like a Phil-Am player. Like he's not a foreign player. He's considered a local, player. Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's still some loopholes to the rules that don't know why it's like that, but we just need to accept it sometimes.
Yeah,
I'm not sure why, what the rationale is. But yeah, going into the SEA Games, you mentioned that you've been privileged and honored to be part of the Gilas for like tournaments like SEA Games or Asian Games, wherein you'd be eligible to play as a. I mean, there's no local or like naturalized there; like it just can be any. So how was that, like, what was the call like for you when you got the opportunity to become in the pool and then the pool started to getting cut down and then you were finally be put in the final 12? What was that whole process for you practicing with them, getting chosen in the final lineup?
It was cool, man. I remember, like, right after our last game when we lost to Hanover in the playoffs in the Governor's Cup, my brother messaged me. He's like, "Hey, Trout is asking if you'd be interested in, SEA Games and Gilas." Mm-hmm. And I was like, at the time I was like, "Man, we just lost. I'm tired. I just played so much." I was like, "You know what? Yeah, I'll play." I was like, "Let's do it. Let's do it." And then the pool came out too, so I was like, "Okay." I looked at it, and I saw a lot of like bigs. I was like, "I'm pretty sure they'll probably use the SEA Games as like a tune-up for the World Cup."
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, chances are slim, but hey, you never know what can happen. So
yes,
I remember I showed up to practice and, it wasn't that many bigs there. I was like, okay, well, these guys just are playing in the playoffs still, you never know. And then more practice went on. I was like, okay, it looks like I'm probably going to be on the 12. So, it was really exciting to just, be a part of that process. And, I'm thankful and grateful to Chad and all his coaches and everybody that, they had me in mind. And, I think I showed myself pretty well, my first season, especially like towards the end, I think I finished pretty strong. So, I just carried that into the Gilas, stint and, the practices and the training camps we had at, Inspire and things like that. And, it was a really, cool experience to go and, play with some, of the best players in the PBA in the Philippines. It was a cool mix of like, young guys, like Jerome and Mike and Ben Phillips, like those guys, like, college still, Mason, then older guys, like, JB and Christian, and then like new guys like me, and so it was a good mix and, we gelled pretty well and, over practice. And I think one of the things that kind of helps the Philippines, like in things like this, is like we play each other so much, like during the season, and we see each other play so much that like when we're thrown together on the national team, like you kind of already know guys' strengths and like what they can do, where they're gonna be, like where they like to get their shots and stuff like that, the game. So, I think that was an advantage that we had, and that's something that I played too. I watch a lot of games, I love watching just PBA games. Like I'll just have it on during the day and just watch and, just scouting and just seeing whatever. So, I was lucky that I just, remembered a lot of that stuff and just contributed to us, going out there and just playing well. And, sorry about that. But,
no worries.
Yeah. And, it was really cool. It was really cool. And, it was nice to come together as a team as well in that short amount of time, because, a lot of us weren't teammates. I think like Christian and JB, obviously they were teammates, but like other than that, I don't think anybody was really teammates on the team before. So, it was a cool experience to be a part of and just to be like selfless and just give yourself, to the team and play for the country. It was a cool experience. I had a little taste of that, for 3x3, but it was different because I was with Limitless, so we already knew each other. But, it was really cool. And when I got, like, that final, like, for sure I was going to be on the 12, I was like, okay, like, this is real. And then that's when a little bit of, like, oh man, we better like go and get this gold. Like we better go
Okay.
do it. Like we better go and do this. So it was really cool. It was really fun too.
Yeah, I'm curious to know, since you mentioned that you're selfless and you were determined to make it to the final lineup despite the loss to Ginebra, you were pretty devastated, and then yeah, you weren't 100%, let's say, like physically, but it's your opportunity to play in the 5-on-5, and you were willing to do it with open arms. And let's just say some players wouldn't do that. They'd rather focus on having a vacation or others. So where did that stem from, that your like love for the country, or maybe your determination to play with these guys, learn from them, and be a sponge from guys like Justin Brownlee, Christian Stanhardinger? So yeah, where did maybe you could tell like a story on why your mindset's like that?
I think maybe just, a little bit of what we touched on before. Like, I'm not eligible all the time. Like, opportunities like this don't come around a lot for me. Like, I've like never, I honestly never even thought I'd be able to like ever represent Gilas. Like, when I came over here, I was like, man, it's just like, I don't think they'll like naturalize me over like Jordan Clarkson or something. You know what I mean? I was like, it's just, I never really thought an opportunity like that would come. So when it did, I was like, you know what, like just give yourself, like, 'cause you never know. I literally know, like, even like when I said before, I saw like the first like 28 man pool. I saw like Jumar on there. I saw Japet and Boy. I was like, oh, they're gonna for sure just bring those guys because they have to get ready, for the big tournament. But as time went on, I just saw myself, just there, and I was like, you know what, like just give it your all. And I think one thing that's, helped me a lot is, over time, my older brother Matt told me, like, I asked him stories about, representing the country, and he said, the pressure is, it's a lot, but it's like good. Like, it's something that gives you drive, that gives you motivation, because everybody's watching. Like, he's all like, it's different from the PBA. Like, it's different from like just a regular Wednesday night game. Like, if you're playing on the national team, everybody in the country is gonna watch, not just people in Manila, not just people, the whole country. So I was like, that's pretty cool. I want to feel that. I want to play under that. I want to perform under that. So, like I said, when that opportunity came, I was like, I'm just gonna give it my all, and whatever's asking me too. I've just always been that type of player. Like, I knew going in, I was like, okay, for this team, I'm not gonna have to like score a bunch or, play a bunch of minutes. I'm just gonna have to play my role and just do my best in my role. So that's just kind of what I did. That's what I focused on. And in practices, I just focused on just making sure the group was getting better and taking it very seriously and stuff like that. So, just culmination of a lot of things of, me and like knowing the opportunities like this don't come around, and being able to just perform for the country and give back. This is my way of serving the country's basketball. So it was just cool to go out and do that in Cambodia in the SEA Games.
Yeah, speaking of serving the country and having the privilege to be in the final 12, I wanted to talk about the tournament. And you guys, I think you won your first games, and leading up to the Cambodia game, even I didn't know that they had around like 5 to 6 naturalized players, and the floor was I don't know what to say, but it's like
All
terrible. And yeah,
right, well,
the training facility, it was like an outdoor court, like stuff I see on
man.
Twitter. So what was that experience like there in Cambodia? Like, what were many of the unusual things you experienced leading up to that Cambodia, the first Cambodia game? And how do you like adapt to those kinds of adversities, as you could say? Because some of it you can't really do anything about it. So how did you guys stick as a group? And even if you lost that Cambodia game, it showed that you guys backed each other up, even during the thing that happened in the end with Chris Ross, with Coach Chaud and everything. So yeah, what was everything leading up to that game?
It was cool. Like, I remember it like started off before we even left Manila. Like, we had like one more practice the morning of, like the day we were gonna leave to go. So we get there, and like Chot like was stressing, like, hey man, like our pool, like, we're probably gonna like just sweep the pool. So we got to focus on like getting through like Indonesia or Thailand in the in the semis. So we're like, okay. And then like that morning, we get to practice, and then he's like, I think it was like Coach Josh or Chot came up to me. He's like, did you see Cambodia has 6 imports? I was like, what? I was like, I thought that was supposed to be one of our easier games. Because I remember like Coach Tim, was saying, like, when they played Cambodia, when they hosted in what was that, like 2019 or 2018, something like that, they beat them by like 60 or something like that. And like they said, like, they had to like tell them to like stop scoring the ball.
Yeah, so, they're not like, known for basketball.
Yeah, they're not known. And I remember like seeing them the year before, the 3x3 players. I was like, I looked at the photo when they showed like all the imports. I was like, yeah, I don't recognize any of those guys. So, so it started with that. We're like, okay, well, this is going to be a lot different than, you know, what we had mapped out. And then, you know, we got to Cambodia, and the first thing, you know, you notice is it was hot as hell, man. It was so freaking hot there. It was like 40 plus, like it was scorching, and like the gym had like no air con. Like the first day we went there for a shoot around, like I literally walk on the floor. I'm like, why is there a bubble, like a hump? I was like, why is there a hump in the at mid court? And I go and I look at it and I literally pick up, like I like pick up the court. I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, what are we playing on? So it was just a lot of things like that. And you know, fortunately, you know, we didn't have to practice on that outdoor court. Like they found a gym for us. So that was fortunate enough. It still wasn't the best. You know, I think it might have been like one of two, like only basketball courts in all of Cambodia that we could like had available. So, you know, it was just stuff like that. But we just were telling ourselves, like, just control what we can control, deal with what we, you know, have to deal with, and just make sure that we keep the end, you know, game in mind, like winning the gold. So, you know, as the game started, you know, I remember that first game we played against, I think it was Malaysia. Like, I thought I was playing, like, in a sauna. It was, like, 12 o'clock, like, noon. The sun was, like, beaming right through the ceiling. There's no air con, no AC. And I remember, like, we warmed up, and it was, like, a 25-minute warm-up. And then at the end of it, my jersey was, like, soaked.
Fourth
like,
I jumped already.
Yeah, I was, like, the game hasn't even started. I need to change my jersey already. So, you know, it was just stuff like the heat. So, you know, we won. And then I remember, you know, the Cambodia game was next. The pool play game versus Cambodia. So, you know, we got there and, you know, we saw them, you know, the night before, two nights before the day we played. And, okay, they're a talented group. And, you know, but we could tell, like, they weren't really, like, familiar with each other. They were still getting used to playing with each other. So we kind of kept that in mind. But also, like, before that game, that's when Calvin got hurt, Aftana. So we were kind of like, dang, like, what do we do now? So, like, right before the game started, Chop was like, okay, Brandon, you're going to start. So I actually, that was the only game I started. But, like, the day before, we had practice, and I wasn't with the starting group. I was like, what?
Oh,
I was like,
okay.
So I'm going to start. So basically, it kind of like I saw what he was doing because they had size, like they had a lot of size, and so he wanted me, Christian, and JB to play with each other. But like I said, the day before I wasn't practicing with them, so we got out there on the court and you know we were just all unfamiliar with each other. Like JB had been practicing at the four, now he had to play the three, and I was practicing as like the backup five. Now I'm the four, and now I'm starting. So. You know, I think that kind of threw us off a little bit. And then it was crazy, too, because at night there, because there's games all day. So there's people in there all day. So the gym just, it's like literally like an oven and it's just baking all day, all day. So at night, you would think like the sun is down, it would be cooler.
No.
No way. It is freaking hotter in there at night. And it was packed because it's Cambodia. So it's like people yelling, like literally the whole fans are full. The Filipinos, the Cabayans are in there going crazy too. So it was just like a mix of things that just like all meshed. And then we just, you know, you kind of saw that performance. And, you know, it was so, I remember it was, that was the hottest night of the whole tournament. And I remember like JB, like watching him like run up and down the court. I was like, he ain't got it, man. I was like, he ain't got it. Like, I literally saw this guy like, play with food poisoning and he looked better than he did, you know, that night. So I was like, yeah, he don't got it. And like he was missing shots and like I never like seen JB like go over on his knees and stuff like that. So I was like, man, it's gonna be a tough task. And you know, they kind of just they hit us in that first, you know, quarter. So I think it was like the second quarter, first quarter, they just hit us in the mouth and you know, we just you know, we stumbled, they staggered us and you know, we weren't really able to, you know, come back. But you know, I think, like you said, that game did kind of, you know, make us come together. and they gave us another like rallying call, like beating Cambodia and their cocky ass coach that called a timeout with 10 seconds left when they're up by like 20. Yeah, they're up, whatever, and they call a timeout. Yeah. And you know, it's crazy because he called the timeout, and it's like, okay, whatever. Like, it's your country, you know, you can do whatever you want. But he called the timeout and like pointed to the crowd and was like, come on. Like,
antics, yeah.
Yeah, we're like, okay, that's when it's like, it's not even like, that's disrespectful. So, you know, Chot lost it, C. Ross lost it, Coach Tim lost it. I never heard Coach Tim like that in my life. It was so crazy. But yeah, like I said, it gave us another cause. Like, okay. I remember after the game, like, we were mad we lost. Like, we thought we were going to sweep it. But we're like, okay, like, they woke up a monster now. Like, they done effed up. Like, when we see them again, I knew. I was like, when we see them again, I'm like, we're going to – it's not even going to be a game. So, yeah, I know. It was crazy looking back. And I think it was just – it was that heat, man, that Cambodian heat. I thought the Philippines was hot. I was like, man, it's crazy out here. So,
is that the first time you experienced playing conditions like that, even when you were in the States?
I mean, it's different because, like, in the States, they're hot gyms. Like, I grew up in California. I grew up in, like, the inland part of California. So it's pretty hot, but it's dry heat. It's just, like, you're just hot. But there, like, in Cambodia and, like, places in the Philippines, like, you're hot and you're sweaty and it's sticky and, like, it's muggy and, you know, it's musty. So it's just different, but that was my first experience like that. And I hope I never experience anything like that ever again.
Yeah. Would you say the SEA Games format is different for this year? Because before, wasn't it like you play every country once and then whoever is the top seed in the standings wins it? But then now, like, there's still like semis and finals. Do you think that helped you guys as well?
Yeah, that actually did help us. You know, that we were fortunate enough. And I remember Charles, like, if there's a game for us to lose, it was this game. Like, you know, we're allowed one slip up. So, you know, it was, you know, we were fortunate that it was that format this year. And I think it's better that way, like having like a playoff, because like, you know, you never know, like us, like we were able to bounce back. Like, you never know a team, like, you know, they lose early in the tournament, but like, you know, they get their legs together and they go on a run, you know, they can go and win the gold. So, and I think that format is a little bit better than just like the round robin and then whoever has the best record is the winner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm curious to say, like you said, that it changed the tide after that loss. Like, some people would say a loss is purely negative or mostly negative, but you'd say that it's a lot of positives because you guys didn't lose after. You guys were closer together because you guys were pretty pissed with what Cambodia's coach did. But how about, on and off the court, like chemistry-wise, maybe on and off the court, or even like scheme-wise or place-wise, like what changed from your perspective from Gilas in the game, especially against Indonesia in the semis and then against Cambodia in the finals that propelled you guys to the win? Because I think this SEA Games for you guys, it's like embedded already in your life, even if you win other championships, like it means something else to you guys.
Yeah, it was, I remember it was like, after we lost, we had like played Singapore the next game. And we're like, okay, like we're going to blast them by like 50 or whatever, you know, like just, it was like, you know, like when you're angry and you just have to like break something or like some people like punt, like they were like, just like the glass we had to break real quick. Like we just had to get Singapore out of the way, get our feelings out. And then we moved on to the Indonesia game. And I remember that night before the Indonesia game, we had practice at like, I think we had it from like 9:30 p.m. to like midnight or almost midnight. Like Chow was like, we got to get working. Like, this is it. Like, this is for real now. And it was like the hardest practice we had as a group the whole time we were together. Like going back to like when we were just getting like the pool together and the 12-man together. And when we went to Inspire and had that training camp. And we were doing like 3-a-days and 2-a-days. Like that night before Indonesia was like the hardest practice we had. And like, I remember Chot like got mad at us a couple of times. Like he was yelling, like raising his voice. And it's like, y'all want to win gold or what? Like, this is it now. So I think it was like that moment where we were like, okay, like, let's do this. Like, that's when we kind of came together on the court and we were just running our stuff. We were super crisp on offense. our defensive like intensity picked up a lot, and you know, we just kind of just rode that wave, and you know, that for sure was the moment where the tide turned for us, and we were like, okay, like I remember like the whole time Trout was saying we got to get back Indonesia because they were the year before. It was like the redemption was to be Indonesia, and we thought we were going to see them in the championship. So we're like, all right, game on now. Like we got them in the semis, and you know, we're like, okay, we got to go. So I remember just that night before the Indonesia game, that's when everything kind of just like the light bulb came on for us as a group. And, you know, we just kind of just took off from there.
Talking about this Gilas team, like this Gilas team in SEA Games, there was a year before, you SEA Games, they got settled for silver. And then here, it was a difficult road to get gold. And before, as you know, even if you weren't in Gilas, they would only send like the college players and we'd still win all the games by blowouts or most of the games by blowouts. So would you say that Gilas would need to value like SEA Games more, like we're putting less importance to SEA Games, like with preparation and everything? Or are our opponents getting stronger and being more formidable? So we need to take them more seriously, like how we play Korea or we play China and Japan, like those countries.
I think it's a little bit mix of both. Like, I think, you know, you can take it serious for sure. Like how we did this last time, like we had like a lot of pro guys, you know, we had JB playing, but also I think it's like, I remember Chad saying like, he wants to kind of hopefully make SEA Games like a tournament for where like the younger guys and the newer, you know, Gilas players can go and like play against some quality competition. Cause we play like some legit, like, imports and players and stuff like that. And I think it's kind of like how like I don't know if you saw like the Team USA roster for this upcoming World Cup. Like it's a lot of like young new guys.
Yes.
You know, it's different, you know, it's a lot different from the us in the US, but
yeah.
It's kind of like the same thing, like I'm mentioning, like they're sending their younger guys to like go to the World Cup and like get that experience and play, you know, some big games, because the games matter. Like the countries are like way more hungry. Like literally I could tell from just a 1 year difference, like from when I was there for 3x3, and I remember just seeing like, you know, the teams that were there for 5x5, but like just seeing like how much like better a team and a country can get in just 1 year, you know, it's pretty remarkable. So I think it's a balance of, you know, sending guys out there that are like ready to play, like they're pros already, or like they're gonna be pros. And, you know, maybe mixing them in with an import or naturalized guy, but also, you know, not having to like always send the best, because like you said, like we have like big aspirations. Like I know like the Olympics is like a big thing, like they're trying to qualify for, and they're always trying to qualify for like the World Cup and stuff like that. So, you know, it's just a mix. And I think it will always get better. Like the more opportunities guys get to play international competition, I think it just raises the level of play here at home. So it's pretty cool. I wonder how they're gonna approach it the next time. You know, I'll be down to play again for sure. Yeah, I might be sure. I'm a little older, but you know, it's always cool, you know, to represent, like I said. So, you know, I'm wondering like how they're gonna approach it. But I know like they can't just send like just college, like college only team. Like
it'll be difficult.
Yeah, that'd be too difficult unless you send like a team, like have they ever sent like just a college team, like Ateneo, the whole team is gonna go play, or like
that in Jones Cup they did that.
Jones Cup they did that.
Yeah, Ateneo didn't win though, but then they played against like US and something, but then they played well with Coach Tab.
Yeah, like let's do something like that to where a team doesn't have to like go through like a whole like training camp process, like trying to learn. It'd be pretty difficult to like send, but you know, we'll see how it goes, because you know, we are like the best team in Southeast Asia for basketball, so you know, teams are always going to be like trying to get, you know, on our level, but you know, we just can't be satisfied. And I think that's the biggest thing, like we just can't be satisfied with just being, you know, the top right now. Like we have to always strive, like we're at the top, but we have to get better constantly.
Yeah, how about for the national team? Like I'm pretty sure that you have like some great insights on how like the team could be developed for future SEA Games and tournaments, but curious for your opinion, because as you know, like the Philippine national team, there's a lot of like stuff going on, like ever since the World Cup appearance in 2014 where people like like admired them a ton. Like this has been shaky. Like our coaches have been changing every couple of years. Players are in and out of the pool, so we haven't been able to ascend like how we envisioned it to be during that, what, 10 years ago, 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm asking you if you have like any like brilliant ideas. Like, of course, we're not like empowered to actually have anything changed in the national team program, but maybe you have an idea on how like it could be sustainable, because others would say like Coach Tab had a sustainable approach when he had these guys like Dwight Ramos, Ange Kwame, like when they beat Korea, and then we've had like an Olympic qualifying tournament and we almost beat Serbia, like that iteration, and then things happen that we don't want to talk about. But yeah, you know, like do you have any brilliant idea on how like a 5-year program could work and how Gilas could become a force, a consistent force in Asia or in the world?
Man, it's kind of tough. I don't know. I mean, I think one, like, it would have to be a lot of buy-in from the players. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I can't really, like, say, like, what motivates guys. And, like, mm-hmm. I know some guys play for, you know, money. Some guys play for family. Some guys play for, like, pride mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So, you know, it would be, like, the best to, like, get players to, like, buy in and, like, come together. Like, and that's pretty tough because also a lot of guys now – have left the country. Like a lot of the talent that are good enough to be in the Gilas pool, like they're gone, you know, for most of the year. Yeah. Because they're not here. So that's pretty tough as well. But man, I think just having like a consistent, like just like, not like training camp, but like just like a time period, like throughout like the whole year where the team comes together and like, and like they work on whatever they have to work on, or they have like meetings and stuff like that to like make sure that they know what the goal is that they're gonna go for. And I think also it'll have to be like a buy-in from maybe the PBA and like the UAP and NCAA, like making sure that like players are available, you know, kind of like from what we said in the beginning, like, you know, the seasons here are long, so like a lot of people have to stay committed to like the teams that are paying them, the franchises that are paying them. So, you know, it's kind of tough in that, right? But like I said, I don't know, man. Like, I just know, like, if I ever got called, you know, I'd be down to play. I'd be willing to play. But, you know, I think also too, like the coaching changes, you know, it doesn't help. You know, I know Chot has like a pretty good, like, I think Chot has some good momentum going right now.
Yeah,
I think they're gaining some steam, you know, heading into you know, the World Cup. So that's good. That's positive. But I think like just constant leadership, you know, and just like a constant like figure, like the somebody that's like the constant like coach, head coach, basically, like being there, having a voice, and just straighten it out. Like that'd be the best for the country, because you know, there's no way like the Philippines shouldn't be like top 20 in the world, like maybe even top 15 in the world, like the talent we have. You know, and I think like they have an opportunity right now too, because there's a lot of the young guys that are like went over, you know, to like Korea and Japan. Like those guys are super young still, like Carl, Kai, and like a lot of the guards like SJ and like all, like they're young. Renz, like Carl, like they're all young still. So like they can like come together and like really like fortify like a real unit. I think having maybe like a consistent like 16 to 20 guys, like,
yeah,
it's hard too, like when like the pool is shuffled, like it's like you never know who's going to be in, who's going to be out. So mm-hmm. maybe just getting like a consistent like 16 to 20 so you can always play. So I mean, that's what I would do, but you know, it's difficult. There's a lot of like factors that go into it, so you know, we'll see what happens, but whatever part I can play in, I know that, you know, I'll always be down.
Yeah, for sure, everyone knows that. And yeah, I like your idea, because before they had a 23 for 23 pool. Well, I think they only got like a couple of players from,
yeah,
that.
I remember seeing that. Didn't, yeah, like that. Two guys or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it did work out. I think 30 and Dwight were like two of the, I don't, yeah, know, like we only got a couple of players from that, but I don't know, at least they're trying. I mean, I don't know, like what, we don't know what happens behind the scenes. You only see like what happens like in the media. So yeah, even in the World Cup rosters of USAID, right? They had a tough time in 2019 when they lost. And as you could see, like, the time when Kobe, LeBron, and Wade were, like, the catalysts. It's hard to replicate the kind of, like, camaraderie and success that they had, even if they were from different teams. So, yeah, it's difficult, especially if it's difficult for them, what more for us? So, yeah. Let's just see about that. But, yeah, for the next part of the episode, we can't leave this episode without asking about your journey, since people know about you playing in Alab, yeah, playing in PBA, 3x3, 5-on-5, and in Gilas. But before that, you mentioned that you were born in the U.S., so I wanted to ask how your childhood and upbringing was. Like, was basketball the first love you had? Did you have other activities as a child? Like, what was your, like, normal day in your childhood like?
Oh, man, I grew up in, like, Southern California, like, born in San Diego. Then we moved to a city called Temecula, California. It's, like, an hour north of San Diego. And that's, you know, where we grew up. And, you know, my brother, Matt, had always played basketball. Like, I remember, for as long as I can remember, like, going to all the Matt's games and stuff like that. And I liked the basketball, like, but I just, like, I was kind of, like, a lazy kid. I was kind of just a lazy kid. Like, I didn't really want to, like, do much. I just, like, go home and, like, just, you know, do my own thing, stuff like that. So I kind of was, like, a late bloomer, kind of. I think I didn't play until I was, like, 10, maybe 11 is when I started playing, like, basketball, like, seriously. Like, I always, like, just play, like, on an outdoor hoop. And, you know, I just tried to just replicate a lot of the things that Matt used to do. So I started kind of late. I started when I was 10. 11, and then I just, from there, just, I fell in love with the game, and, you know, I played, you know, middle school basketball in Temecula. I went to Temecula Valley High School. I was a four-year starter on varsity there, you know, and then after that, I played two seasons of junior college basketball at Central Arizona College, and I did pretty well there. I was, like, a, you know, all-state player, I think I was, or all-conference, whatever they call it. Then I went from Central Arizona, and then I went to UC Riverside, to Division I school in Southern California as well. And I finished my last 2 years there. And I actually played against, like, Dwight. He was at Cal State Fullerton there. Kobe, Kobe Paras, he was at Cal State Northridge, I think. So it was a pretty good, you know, mix. I even played against Jamie, you know, when he was at Portland State. So it was, it was pretty cool, like, just seeing everybody just make their way out here. Because, you know, you kind of know who the other Phil-Ams are just from, like, you know, things like that. So you kind of, like, see them and you follow them a little bit. So it was cool, like, to go up against those guys in college. And then we all kind of made our way out here. So, then after that, you know, the college days, I just came out here and I made the jump and played for Ala.
Playing for those multiple schools that you mentioned in the United States, I'm curious to know, like, among all those things, like, it's known in the States that people, like, move schools, like, pretend here in the Philippines, like, if you're in Metro Manila, like, if you're in La Salle Ateneo, it's all, like, in the same area. Mm-hmm. But then you've played, like, in various schools, in grade school and high school. So among those schools, like, what do you remember most from your stints there? Like, when someone mentions, like, oh, your high school, like, what sticks out to you, whether it's some teammates you had, coaches, experiences, or memories that you had?
Oh, man, I remember in my senior high school, I was, like, that's when I, like, started taking basketball really serious, and it kind of, like, I remember, like, playing, like, a lot. Like, that's the most I ever played. Like, I was playing, like, so much on the AAU circuit. You know, that was huge back home, you know, playing on the, I think I played on the Adidas tour, so that was pretty cool. And, you know, high school was a good time. Like I said, you know, I started on varsity for 4 years. And then, you know, going to college, you know, I had to go to junior college. You know, like I said earlier, I was a lazy kid. So that laziness came into high school and I didn't, like, take care of my academics. I had to go to community college, which, you know, junior college basketball, man, it's no joke. Like, some of the best players I ever played, you know, against were at my junior college. Like, I remember one time we were playing, like, some school from New Mexico. Mm-hmm. It was just skinny, lanky, like forward/3 that was out there just dunking everything. I was like, who is this guy? They're like, oh, he's from Canada. His name is Chris Boucher. I'm like, who, what? I played against Chris Boucher. And like, I remember seeing him, like, years later. I'm like, this dude's on the Raptors, like, getting minutes. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. Like, you just never know. Like, there's some of like the talent, like the best talent, you know, comes from junior college ranks. So I remember just the junior college like grind was, it was just different. It's very difficult. Like I left home and I went to Arizona. It's like, it was about 6-7 hours away from home. Mm-hmm. And it's super hot there. I was in the middle of the desert and I was just surrounded by dirt and cactus. So, you know, all you can do is just play basketball and go to class and things like that. So, no, I think my most memorable, like, part of my basketball career so far was those JUCO days for sure. Like, those 2 years, like I said, I played against some of the best players and, like, some of the players that I played with that were on my team at Central Arizona, like, they're still some of my best friends to this day. That's pretty cool. And, you know, after that, I made my transition to UC Riverside. And, you know, that was really cool. Like, you know, it's crazy because a lot of, like, kids have a dream about, like, playing, like, in the NBA or, you know, doing, like, stuff like that. I was weird. Like, my dream was to just play Division I college basketball. Like, that was, like, my only, like, basketball dream I had. Like, I always wanted to just play in March Madness. Like, I always wanted to just have an opportunity to play there. But, you know, unfortunately, that didn't happen. But, you know, I played for Riverside, and we play in the Big West. So we played some big-time schools. I got to play against, like, Michigan, UCLA, when they had, like, Lonzo and all those guys. Right. So Cal and, like, USC and all those teams. So, mm-hmm. You know, it was pretty cool to live out my dream, like, you know, playing Division I basketball and things like that.
Yeah, so being able to play in, like, Arizona and playing against, like, Division I caliber players, like, how did you connect that to, like, your Philippine roots and have the idea of playing here for ALA? Because, yeah, that's not, like, connected. It's like you're in the other side of the world. And, you know, you do have Filipino blood. Your brother was playing at that time here, maybe for TNT or I don't know what team. But, he played here also for Gila. So, yeah, what was your mindset like when you were in the when you were in the US? Like, did you ever actually cross your mind to actually play here, or it only crossed your mind when someone told you? Like, yeah, what was the story behind that?
No, like you said, Matt was a big influence, you know, just seeing him. And, following his early career. Like, I remember being in my dorm when I was in Arizona and watching his final series his rookie year when they played against Rain or Shine. That was kind of like that. When I became like a fan of the PBA. I was like, oh man, this is great. Like, to this day, like, Rondell, RDO, like, he's like my idol. Like, that dude, like, the things he did that series. Like, I remember, like, game 7, he had, like, a 30-point, like, triple-double or something like that.
So, yeah.
No, I think – I remember, like, that series had, like, a big impact on me. And I was like, you know what, like, maybe one day, like, I can see myself, like, going out there and playing. So after my 2 years with Riverside ended up, I was like, you know what, I'll give a shot. Like, I wanted to keep playing. You know, I wasn't done playing. I was like, I know I still have a lot left in the tank, so we'll see what happens. You never know. So I thought about maybe, like, going, like, G League. I know there's a lot of, like, tryouts and stuff in the States for, like, college players. So I was like, maybe I'll do that. But I was like, no, I want to go back home. Because the year before my senior year of college, I actually came to Manila just to visit my brother and my his family and my nieces. And he was on San Miguel at the time. So I got to, like, see that and go to their games. And I was like, yeah, I think this is going to be, like, the place for me. This is, like, the fit for me. So after that, I came. And then I was, like, wondering. I was asking Matt for his advice. I'm like, do you think I should just join the draft right away? Because at that time, you had to, like, get, like, these, like, recognition papers. Or, like, the rules were different at the time. Yeah, so it was kind of tough. He's like, well, you know, you can play for Alam. You know, Charlie D, our agent, he was the owner of Alam. So I reached out to him. He's like, you know, you can come play for me for a year. We'll work on your papers. Then you'll join the draft. So I was like, all right, let's do it. So after that, after he said that, I just, like, packed the box and the bag up, and I just flew out here, and I joined Alam.
Yeah, playing for Alam Pilipinas, like, it wasn't as – I mean, like, for me personally, I'd watched it more before, and then the time when, like, Ray Parks was there. Was he your teammate? Mm-hmm. Or was that?
Yeah, I played with Ray for 1 year.
Yeah, playing with season, Ray, yeah. Like, that was the time when it was popular. But then there was a time, like, no one really watched ABL, I think there was a time. And then there was a time before that, like, when it started, like, a lot of people watched it when, I think, Matthew Wright was there with Westport, Malaysia Dragons. And, yeah, playing with Ray Parks and, I think, Brownlee was also in Alab, Balkman was in Alab, and then I think a lot of other Phil-Ams were also there during your time. So what was that experience, and how did you feel that it got you ready for Philippine brand of basketball or Asia brand of basketball, since it's different from the US, and also for the draft, even if your draft got delayed, you know, like how did that
help you? It was good, man. I ended up playing two seasons with Alab, and both for Coach Jimmy Alapunk, shout out to him. And like you said, just more than anything, it just got me ready to like just play in Asia and play in the Philippines. Like, it was like a whole different brand of basketball. Like, I was able to go there and learn how to be a pro too. Like, that helped a lot. Like, learning from like Balkman, Ray, you know, learning from those guys. I remember Josh Arvistondo, my rookie year, he was there, and he helped out a lot. So, you know, it was really cool. And, you know, I remember I was telling people I was on Alab, and they're like, oh, who's the coach? It would just be like, you know, people just I'm talking to, like, around Manila, and I'm like, oh, Coach Jimmy Alapong. They're like, Jimmy's your coach? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, also, Coach Eric Mink. Eric's your coach? Like, major fan? Like, yeah. I was like, yeah, Danny Siegel. Like, Danny's your coach too? So, I knew of them, but I didn't really know, like, the type of players and like the impact they had out here. So I was just a sponge. Like, when I found out that those guys, you know, had like the reputation they had the, you know, accolades and things like that. So I was just very, very fortunate to just learn from those guys, and them being, you know, Phil-Am as well. Like, they were able to like tell me like the things I'm going to experience, like the things I'm going to have to deal with out here. And like the adjustment period of like living in the States to the Philippines, even though I remember they were saying, like, because we we lived in we practiced in BGC at Carry Sports at Shane. And then Jimmy's like, man, when I came out here in 2000, like, this was nothing. Like, it was literally just like a dirt lot. Like, he's like, and it was just like funny, like the things he would tell us, like how he would have to like go to like an internet cafe and like instant message like his family back home. Like, he couldn't even like call or anything. Like, it's just like different, like how time has changed over, you know, the years. So more than anything, like just the lessons I learned and I took from Alab are like the biggest thing. Like, the hoop was fun too. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, we had some pretty good teams, especially my first season there. We had a really good team. We had a really good team. We should have won a championship. That stings to this day. But like, it was just fun, man. And then being able to travel Southeast Asia and like experience like all those different countries and cultures, like right after college, like that was really cool too as well. So I was just fortunate, man. Like, I was able to get on that team because, like you said, at that time, that's when like the ABL was like getting like a little bit more popular. They had they had just won the championship too the year before. So like the popularity was like pretty high. So it was just cool, man. Like, the ABL, like, I remember when it came back again, and like, the draft hadn't started yet. I was like, man, I'll like go like be like an Asian import in Singapore or something like that. Like, I'll go play in Hong Kong. Like, just like going, like experiencing those things. Like, it's pretty cool. So, you know, maybe like one day when I'm like 40 or something, like my last year of playing, I'll just go play in that ABL again one more time. Just like, like send off an ABL.
Yeah. Hopefully the ABL is still active by that time. And because it's been it's fun to like relax, like you see them play at like night here in the Philippines, and it's just fun basketball to watch when nothing's going on and TV, and it's like entertaining, even if it's like not the Philippines playing. But I'm interested to know, like, since you, I believe that it raised your draft stock playing for Alab Pilipinas and Limitless and 3x3. I'm curious to know, like, how it was for you, how tough it was for you, because you mentioned earlier that the draft process was not as relaxed as it is right now during that time when you applied, because you were delayed for, I think, 1 year, like year before you wanted to apply, you weren't eligible or whatever happened. So for you personally, how difficult was that process? Like, what can you share about the process of applying for the PBA draft and how you overcame that hurdle in your life, and how you remained like persistent that my goal is to still make it to the PBA. I'm going to try my best, do everything I can. So what was that whole like year like for you?
It was pretty tough. Like, I remember like the pandemic hit 2020. I remember like January 2020, I was like, was like, okay, I'm gonna get my papers together now, and like, I'm gonna join the draft after the ABL season. And then that was January 2020, and I didn't like end up doing it. But then, you know, pandemic hit March, then everything shut down. I was like, oh crap. So I had to go home 2021. And then I remember that draft, I applied like so much, like I appealed so much to get in that draft, because, you know, I wasn't playing when I was back home. I was just like working out. I was just living at home, you know, living off my savings and things like that. So I was just like, man, I want to play again. Like, I just want to play. So I remember, like, I applied so much. Like, I remember I wrote a letter to, you know, Commissioner Willie. Like, I wrote him emails. I even wrote him like a hand note letter. I was like, please, I'm like, I swear, I'm Filipino. Yeah, yeah. Like, I swear, like, I'm not like trying to, like, you know, do anything shady, like, you know, I played in ABL, things like that. And, you know, I remember the PBA told me there, like, it wasn't a thing about them, like, saying I wasn't Filipino or, like, denying my heritage. It was just a rule that they had, and they didn't want to, like, really, you know, change the rule. So I was like, okay, you know, so, you know, that kind of left me a little deflated. And, you know, I was like, you know, the PBA is just, it's not going anywhere, you know. But, you know, I'm not getting any younger either. You know, it's been almost like 2 years and I haven't played. So I was like, you know, it's going to be pretty tough. And I remember, like, after, like, the last time I, like, had reached out to the PBA and they told me no, like, I couldn't join. I was like, okay, yeah, I guess I'm just going to, you know, be at home and I'm going to get a job and try my best to stay in somewhat of basketball shape and keep my skills sharp. And I remember I was going to go work for a construction company.
Oh.
And then, like, yeah, like, I was going to go. Like, I was going to just go work, get a job, 9 to 5. And then my agent, Charlie, he messaged me. He's like, would you want to play 3x3 basketball? I was like, hell yeah. I was like, I'll play anything. Like, I'll play anything. He's like, okay, well, the PBA is going to start a new PBA 3x3 league. And, you know, we're going to get a team together and you're going to play. I was like, okay. I just said yes. Like, I remember I was just replying, yes, okay, that's good. Like, I was just, like, agreeing with, like, whatever you want, I'll do it. Like, I just want to play
again. Yeah.
So I remember the original plan was for me, Jason Brickman, Jeremiah Gray, and somebody else. We were going to form a team of our own.
Oh, that's formidable.
3x3. Yeah, we were gonna make a team of our own and play together. But then, like, I think the PBA, like, made a rule to, like, no, one Phil Foreign per team. <I'm> like, okay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
All right. So I remember Brickman had signed with Morocco, and then Maya had signed with Talking Text. And then I was just, like, I was the odd man out. I was like, oh, it happened again. I don't got a team again. And then I remember, like, a week later, my agent had missed me. He's like, hey, Phoenix, they're putting a team together, and they want you. So I was like, okay. So I just went to Phoenix, and I remember coming over here. I was out of shape as heck. I was just like, never played 3x3 in my life. And it was a cool experience, man. And I was able to, you know, be coached by Coach Willie Wilson. And he helped me out a lot. And I remember the first day I got to Limitless Practice, he's like, what do you want to do after this? I was like, I want to play in the PBA. Like, I'm going to join the draft. He's like, okay. He's like, I'm going to make you the number one pick. I was like, all right. I was like, let's do it. I was like, he's like, we're going to have to put in work though. I was like, okay. Like, I've never been one to run away from work. So that was literally the first day I remember, like, the first conversation we had. He's like, I'm going to make you the number one pick. So it just went from there, man. And I remember the adjustment period of me, like, learning how to play 3x3, because it's, like, it's a different game from, like 5-on-5. It's, like, a completely different brand of basketball. And I remember it took us a little bit to gel together the team. I got in shape, and then we took off, and we ended up winning the grand finals, the first conference for Limitless. Yeah, I remember we just ended up winning the whole thing. And then I was like, oh, dang. And then we had another conference, and we played well again. I think, like, before, like, our time there together, like, I don't think any team won as much as we did, like, for sure. I think it was, like, only Talking Text. And then, like, right after, like, that Limitless team, like, we went and played in the SEA Games, and we got bronze. And then we all just went our separate ways. And then I remember, like, we got on the flight back home from Vietnam. And then when we landed, I got, like, a message, like, oh, you're the number one pick. And then I remember I looked at Willie. He's like, I told you. He's like, I told you you're going to be the number
one
pick.
Yeah.
So it was just crazy. Like, that whole, like, timing was just, like, everything. Because I remember I was, like, so deflated and, like, so dejected, like, when the pandemic hit and then I couldn't go. Then I applied for a draft, I got denied. Applied again, and I got denied. And then I ended up doing 3x3, and then I ended up being the number one pick. So everything just kind of just worked out. And I just never, like, gave up, like, hope and faith in myself. Like, I knew that, like, I belonged in the PBA, and, like, I wanted to be there, and, like, I was good enough. So, you know, I was just very just – driven. I was like, you know, I can't wait till I get there to finally prove, you know, to everybody. And then when I got to the PBA, I'm like, okay, now I'm going to actually show them, like, what they've been, like, denying this whole time. And then it just went from there, and then I came to the number one pick and got drafted by Blackwater.
Yeah, since you're here now and, like, in the NLEX and in the PBA, and you're, like, a starting caliber player in the PBA, what's, like, one or thing or a couple of things that you'd want, like, the children or, like, aspiring basketball players to know and learn from, like, their whole journey that you shared here in the podcast? Like, what do you want them to stick out? What do you want for them to stick out on your career and, like, that they could maybe, like, learn from or emulate in their own journey?
I think just a couple of things that we touched on and, like, we talked about, like, one, like, just never giving up. Like, you know, if you believe in yourself, that's more than enough. Like, you only need one person to believe in you, and that's just you. Like, if you have a dream or you have a goal about, you know, reaching a certain level in basketball or whatever, you know, you are in or you're doing, you know, you can do it as long as you put in the work. And then, you know, two, just, you know, being selfless, you know, giving yourself to others and, like, making sure that, like, you're not, like, really stepping on anybody to get to where you need to be, or making sure that, like, you're, like, not being, like, selfish in a way to where it's going to hamper you, or make sure that, you know, you don't advance. Like, if you're in a team setting or you're in a place to help somebody else, you know, be selfless, man. Like, give back and, you know, play your role. And then three, I think just have fun, man. Like, you know, I always pride myself on, like, I think if you watch me play, like, I'm pretty intense. You know, I'm pretty, and what do they call me? They call me Yabang. Like, I'm pretty intense, but it's all fun. You know, at the end of the day, like, yeah, it's literally just, it's just how I express myself out there on the court. Like, it's nothing personal. It's never personal. You know, it's never that bad. But enjoy what you're doing. You know, have fun with it. You know, respect the game, of course. But just, you know, go do your thing, man. Whatever you're good at, whatever, you know, you think, you know, you can do, you know, go and do it. You know, the best players are the most confident ones. You know, the best, you know, the highest, you know, CEOs are the most confident ones. Like, have confidence in yourself. Do what you do. Do what you love. And, you know, everything will work out.
Yeah, that's some great points that people would want to, like, learn from this episode. And yeah, thank you again, Brandon, for joining me on the pod. But before we wrap up, I ask my guests a couple of questions before they go. So yeah, to start things off, based from what we've been talking, you watch a lot of NBA also. And, like, in the bubble, that's where the players were more vocal with their social and political issues. And here in the Philippines, as you know, like, people are more, like, timid or shy when it comes to their viewpoints or opinions on these kinds of things. But in the pandemic, I think it changed a bit. Like, whenever there was stuff happening in the country, it'd be more expressive on their opinions, especially during election season. As you know, like, people were more vocal with their, like, stance on certain issues. Mm-hmm. So you, as a Filipino, would you say, as a Filipino and as an athlete, like, would you say that it would be great for athletes or sports personalities to, like, utilize their platform and amplify their voice in order to get their followers, like, learn more about it or be more knowledgeable with the issues?
Yeah, of course. You know, it's a responsibility and it's a privilege, you know, that we get to have a platform that we have. So making sure that, you know, we're spreading, you know, things that are positive, things that are, you know, not bad and things. So, you know, I always try and just make sure that, you know, whenever I'm portraying myself, that, you know, I'm portraying the best self side of myself. And, you know, always show, you know, whether it's online or in person, that, you know, I stand with good. And No, I think it's tricky because, you know, people have freedoms, you know, and things like that, like to voice their opinions. So, you know, you can essentially say whatever you want, but, you know, you never know, you know, what impressionable person or kid, you know, is looking or watching you. So I think just making sure that you always in the back of your mind, you just make sure and understand that, you know, it's a privilege and, you know, you have to take this responsibility, you know, serious.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, like, that's what the athletes are trying to do. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, whenever they express their viewpoints, it's they're knowledgeable about it. It's not just like for the clout or just, you know, to get the attention of their followers. So yeah, that's a great view that you shared there. So yeah, for the next question, if you had the opportunity to have dinner with five people, dead or alive, who would you invite?
Man, that's tough. Five people dead or alive? Is this just like anybody or like
Yeah,
basketball
like
or just
literally even
famous?
I don't know them. It's fine. Yeah.
Man, five people dead or alive. I think just all like my grandparents that I've lost, especially like the ones, my Lola in the Philippines,
Yeah.
my grandfather back home, my great grandfather and my great grandmother, my dad's side. You know, I didn't, you know, we grew up in California. My dad was from Philadelphia, and then obviously my mom was from here. So just to like maybe just, you know, have time to just pick their brains, ask about our family roots and things like that. That'd be pretty interesting and pretty cool. So I'll say just all like, you know, my grandparents that have like moved on and passed, being able to sit at a dinner with them would, that'd be pretty crazy. That'd be pretty cool.
That's an interesting answer. Like, none of my guests ever had that answer. I mean, they'd have like a couple of family members or one family member that passed away that they're close to. But for you, that's great that, yeah, it's like all your, yeah, relatives. And yeah, it's good to, for sure, you'll learn something from them about not only about your family, like your family history, but stuff that happened in their generation that we're both unaware of. Yeah. Yeah, so for the final question that I ask my guests is, you know that I message these athletes and sports personalities like you guys on social media and in email. So if joining this podcast, like who would you suggest could guest here at the podcast that would have a great story to tell or would be just a fun person to talk to about sports? What, not necessarily basketball only, but yeah, any sport that you would suggest that you could suggest here on the podcast.
Man, I don't really know. I think it'd be pretty cool. Like, have you had my brother on before? I think Matt would
No,
have had a
not
pretty
yet.
good story. Like, he had a pretty good like way of getting to the PBA, and like he was like somebody. I think every team he's ever played on besides Terra Firma has won a championship. So like he's like a winner. Like if you want to like pick a winner's brain, like I
Right.
think
Like Robert
he's a
Horry
pretty
type.
right. He's
Yeah.
just whatever team he goes on, they win.
Yeah.
So I think that'd be pretty cool. I don't know. I think you know, I'm trying to think just like basketball wise. Maybe some coaches would be cool. You know, Coach Frankie, I know he has a lot, like in practice, he talks a lot. So I think
Oh
it'd be
yeah.
pretty cool to talk to Coach Frankie. You know, I know like he talks about his like playing day sometimes, but I don't really know like how good he was and
Same.
stuff like
I'm not
that.
that
Yeah,
familiar.
like I don't really know. I
Yeah.
remember I asked Coach Tim when I was with Gillis and he was saying like, yeah, he was a pretty good player. So I think that'd be pretty cool. And then maybe like a Olympic like athlete, somebody inspiring to be in the
Oh.
Olympics. Because
Yeah.
those people, like it's different. Like they're self-motivated. Like it's not really a team thing. And you know, their games or events, they come around like every 4 years, 2 years. So maybe picking their brain and seeing how they operate and stay motivated, that'd be pretty cool.
Okay, yeah, that's great. I'll keep that in mind. And yeah, thank you again, Brandon, for joining me here on the podcast. And do you have any final message before you go?
Just I appreciate you having me, man. I know we were playing phone tag, like message tag for a little bit while there, but I'm really glad and thankful that, you know, you had me on the show, and you know, I can't wait to watch it back and see, you know, what things we talked about. But you know, other than that, just I appreciate the support from everybody watching, and you know, good luck to you and your journey as well. You know, maybe one day, you know, you cover me, you know, differently. But
Hopefully.
yeah, that'd be pretty cool. But you know, I'm just really thankful. I had a lot of fun, you know, talking and reminiscing and
Same. Yeah.
talking about the past. So just appreciate it.
Yeah. I hopefully to see you at the games. And yeah, I'll say hi to you. And yeah, hopefully I get to
Yeah, for
cover
sure,
you
bro.
too in the PBA and hopefully for Gilas. And yeah, before you go, is it okay if we take a picture?
Yeah, yeah, no worries.
Okay, I'll take it. 1, 2, 3. Okay, thank you, Brandon, for joining me here on the pod. And yeah, see you soon and stay safe.
Yeah, appreciate it, bro.